This episode is supported by NC Idea. More on them later.
The colleges are trying, but I think students are just honestly making the wrong decisions. I think it's a problem that's so worth solving. You plan for college. College is, in general, a great option, but there are, of course, other options, and those options are good for some people. Hopefully, we can get back to a point where higher education as an institution is really, you know, back to being extremely well-respected.
Hello, everyone. My name is Angela Hollowell, and I'm the host of Honey and Hustle. Today on the show, I am speaking with Henry Woodbridge, who is the founder of the Undecided app. Not only is Henry also a fellow member at American Underground, but he is an incredible founder who's been working in the edtech space to provide software solutions for high school seniors and high school students in general who are looking to make informed decisions about their college admissions process. In this episode, this EdTech founder will show you how creating non-traditional paths to education will have massive benefits for high school seniors. Thanks so much for joining us today. This podcast is free and will always be free and available on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, Good Pods, Heytime, you name it. While it's free for you to consume, it's not free for us to create. We pay our video editors, writers, production assistant, and operations manager for helping us make this show come to life. If you'd like to support us in making this show, please consider subscribing to our Substack community, using our affiliate links, or just simply sharing the show with someone who might enjoy it. All right, let's get into this conversation. I am not going to try to guess your age, but if it's anything near where I'm at, you know, I can only imagine what having an app like Undecided would have been like when I was like looking at colleges and exploring my options. And it's not to say that, you know, I was in the Stone Age. We had internet, but to have something that's super accessible, that's on your phone, and that really kind of gives you unique insights that, you know, maybe you would have to travel to a school to get, right? Which for a lot of people isn't always the easiest thing to do. And in today's age, not always financially possible for a lot of people. So talk to me a little bit about kind of like how the idea for the Undecided app came about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And just to start off, I want to say thanks for having me on the podcast. It's an honor to be on your podcast. So grateful to be here. And thanks for such a good introduction to Undecided. College planning is a really challenging problem, especially when you're 17 years old. You know, your frontal lobe isn't developed yet, and you're trying to make these decisions that are going to impact the rest of your life. So, we think the tool is extremely beneficial for students and to really help them with that problem. But the idea kind of came around throughout my own college planning experience. And I went to a really small liberal arts college. I was a very average high school student. You know, C's across the board, you know, just all over. I couldn't really find my calling during high school. That's not to say that I wasn't ambitious and had passions, but I never really found that niche. And, you know, high school is notoriously a challenging time. It's your teenage years. But I was able to go to Guilford College, which had a college campus where I fit academically and socially extremely well. So we called our professors by their first names. So we were close with our professors, really stimulating and engaging discussion-based classes. So opposed to like a large research university where there's 300 students and it's all lecture-based. The discussion-based classes really fit my own learning style well. So with that being said, I was able to observe, you know, how big of an influence a specific college campus had on me as an individual. And it's interesting, looking back to my time in college there, I can almost get this feeling of like growth while I was there, where I was like, in high school, I was a little lost. When I got to college and like in that environment, I was like gaining so much autonomy and ability to like take control of my own life. And that was extremely empowering. And that's really what we're trying to do at scale, is bring that sense of empowerment through education to everyone. Because typically, you know, college planning is really only accessible to, you know, wealthier wealthier demographics. And yeah, that's where the idea came. I'll also just mention quickly, I was a transfer student. So I eventually transferred to UNC Chapel Hill. And I was a little less successful there. And that kind of reinforced this idea of like, you know, the college campus is in itself is going to influence who, how successful you are outside of, you know, your own, either your work ethic or something like that. The college campus will have a direct influence. So that's where the idea came from. And
That's beautiful. But like, I guess what I'm thinking, and I hate to say but so quickly into our conversation, but like, and then I said it again. When I think about college and how it is marketed or kind of explained to high schoolers, at least how it was explained to me, was that like when you get to college, like nobody cares about your excuses. You don't have your parents there to wake you up. You don't have professors reminding you when a test is going to be because they gave you the syllabus and you should know. And there, off the bat, it's kind of a very different aspect an approach to education than high school, where you are in many ways coddled. But I think one thing that they both kind of have in common is that, like, for better or for worse, current education systems do not always have the capacity to teach students in a way that resonates with them most, right? So like, you know, figuring out your learning styles, figuring out how you best, you know, engage and connect with an educator, how you can best be provided with an environment to thrive in and out of the classroom is like not always a conversation that's directly had with students or even between parents and students. And so it's beautiful to hear that like, oh, you got this incredible, like enlightening and empowering experience. But like, I would say that's probably not the norm and also kind of hard to communicate in a college visit, in a college tour, in a college, like, you know, what do you call them, conference or whatever, where you're coming to see different booths of colleges and they're trying to accurately, you know, explain like what the college experience is going to be like at their university. So talk to me a little bit about how Undecided has gone about also bridging that gap between like knowing what you will expect at a university as well.
You really, you know, articulated a lot of the nuance of the problem that we're trying to solve. And to give a little bit of pushback on at least how I think about it, I think it's the case that college campuses in particular, compared to high schools, I think college campuses do have more resources and try to make an effort to help their student body. However, I think the fact that every college campus being extremely different just really favors some students to others. Whether it's a, you know, an HBCU and a very diverse campus where some students will thrive, or it's a large research school where there's, you know, groundbreaking research happening in, you know, your particular field of interest, or it's a small liberal arts college like me where I can have intellectual conversations with my professors. So I think the colleges are trying, but I think students are just honestly making the wrong decisions. And that problem comes, I think, from, you know, high school, where there is a lot of abstract thinking to do to make the decision, where it's like, you know, you need to have an understanding of yourself and where you're going to be a good fit. What's important to you? What are your values? What's your why statement for going to college? And so some of those more abstract ideas, and this is the challenge of our business, which I find thrilling, is that, you know, that's what we try to help students with. So being really holistic with, you know, our app features, and including guided journals to have students reflect on what's important to them, or an assessment that matches students to a college campus based on things like diversity or learning style and, you know, their majors that they're interested in. So there's a lot of features that we've designed into the app that try to really get at that core root of the problem, but it's challenging. And I think we make progress on it every day, but it is a very, very interesting, but I think it's a problem that's so worth solving at the same time.
Yeah.
So that makes it easier.
Yeah. And I think that's a good way to put it. And this is obviously not to disparage colleges, but I do think that it is a tall order for a college student. It was a tall order for me to say, like, what is most important to me in a college environment, right? Yes, I value diversity. Yes, I value having options to different majors and really different walks of life. And I think, like, one thing that I greatly benefited from going to University of Alabama at Birmingham, which is a fairly decently sized school, was that, like, when I decided to change my major, I had options. And I think one thing that, you know, when you're young and you're still kind of figuring it out, whether you want to start a business, whether you want to work for someone else, whether you want to go into research or academia, whatever field you want to go into, is, well, what will my life look like in 5 years? And we'll just never know the answer to that question. Who will I be in 5 years? We'll never know the answer to those questions. And, you know, you're, again, growing so much between 17 and 22. Those are hard kind of forecasting questions to answer. So talk with me a little bit about some of maybe the kind of light bulbs that you've seen turn on for students as they're using the guided journal and really kind of gaining insights from the app.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thanks for asking. I think some of the, I mean, I think the first thing that needs to be addressed, to be honest, when I think about, like, light bulb moments that students have, is that the majority of high schoolers are just extremely uneducated about college. So, you know, we can talk about these abstract things where high school students are, you know, having moments of self-discovery about, you know, their future, but it starts with the fundamentals. And a lot of that is just that students don't even know how to apply to college. The majority of students don't know how to apply to college. They don't know what the Common App is. They don't know what FAFSA is. They don't know how to apply to scholarships. So, you know, I don't mean to, you know, back the conversation up a bit, but I think it's important that the majority of what we deal with actually is much more fundamental education around college planning.
And
in one way, that's encouraging because those are kind of, that's like low-hanging fruit that we can knock out quickly. And we do some of that with, you know, our AI chatbot. So we can knock those questions out and then get to the more difficult stuff. Like some of that more self-reflection. But yeah, like just the college list building, I think, is some of the most valuable for students, where they're actually being reflective of what their strengths are as a student, or just socially what some of their weaknesses might be, where they think they might fall into traps at large schools or party schools. We've seen that in some use cases that are really hopeful to see. But I think we're still mastering the basics. And we definitely see some success in some of the more abstract college advising, and hope to continue to do so. But I do think it's important to mention just the reality that a lot of the work we do right now is also focused on, you know, the fundamentals.
And that's an incredible baseline to start with, because I do think that's so important. I think sometimes we go into things like, I want to solve this big problem, but it's like, I am three steps away from getting people to recognizing what the big problem is. And we have to solve those bottom three first before we can even get to the larger conversation of, like, okay, now that you know all of these things, what school is right for you? You know, why do you even want to go to college? Do you still want to go now that you know all these things? Right. So one thing I love that you kind of glossed over that I really do want to hone in on is kind of this, like, almost like crowdsourcing element to the Undecided app. Right. So, like, a lot of the knowledge that you're talking about as it relates to these schools is something, things that you can only get through, like, firsthand accounts. Right. So, like, how other people have, you know, their experiences through at different colleges and things like that. So talk to me a little bit about that element of the app and how students kind of resonate with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and this actually, some of this comes out in our guided journals where we have students think more thoroughly about, you know, what they like about campuses and things. But I think going back to one of the original points is just that college campuses are so unique that it's very hard to read about a college online or go visit a college's website and understand how you're going to be successful at that college or you're not going to be successful at all. It's very difficult to understand some of those nuances. So we really encourage our students to go to and visit campus. You know, there's always some unique secrets that you find out on those college tours that I think can really influence and shed light into whether you'll be successful. So we think a lot about that and just really trying to foster that, that idea of taking a campus tour and learning more about it explicitly.
This conversation is getting good, and trust me, it's only going to get better. But before we go on, I wanted to take a minute to thank our sponsor, NC Idea. NC Idea is an independent, private foundation whose vision is to help North Carolinians achieve their entrepreneurial ambition to start and grow high-potential companies. They have grants, workshops, and an annual summit, all to help advance entrepreneurship and promote equitable economic development. To learn more and apply for grant funding, visit their website at the link in the description or head to ncidea.org. All right, let's get back into this conversation.
For people who are not familiar with the ed tech space, which I certainly am not, I think like this is kind of, we're at the start of a new era, I should say. I think, ed tech and health tech, I think people are really starting to embrace as viable opportunities for careers in the education and health industries, which before, you know, we're talking about two industries that, you know, have had one or two primary tracks for a very long time, right? Yeah. If you're in education, you know, you're working in research or you are a professor. You're an educator, yeah. You know, you're an administrator.
Yes.
That was kind of it, you know? And now we're talking about something completely different.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up because, I mean, one, I get some sentiment of this question a lot. It's like, there are a lot of different pathways to education that aren't necessarily four-year degrees.
Right.
And it is so interesting because, like, even myself on my own entrepreneurial journey, like, instead of necessarily going back and getting an MBA, I've decided to, you know, use online resources or like Coursera, which is a famous ed tech product. So there's so many education alternatives out there that are really valuable, you know, and some I've taken advantage of. But, you know, for a high schooler that's making this decision, it's difficult. And if you don't mind, I'll kind of explain why is that there are two sides to this problem. One, let's say you're a low-income student and you go to college. If you were to not graduate college, to just go into the workforce with a high school degree, if you go to college, you would earn approximately $1 million more over your lifetime. Mm-hmm. You'd have significant employment stability, so you'd be resilient in an economic recession. Mm-hmm. And a lot of your friends would have those same benefits. So you'd have a lot of that social capital, as they call it, from graduating college. Mm-hmm. So, you know, tons of economic benefits of doing that. But on the alternative, like if you don't plan for the process well, you could go to school. There's a 40% chance you'll drop out of college and then you might be stuck with student loans. You don't have a degree. So on the other side, you know, yeah, you could make a really costly mistake. And then there's other alternatives like trade schools where you can earn so much more. There's so many good online learning platforms. Yeah. There's a lot of alternative education options. We're now seeing a lot of large Companies have apprenticeship programs that students can do. You know, now it's the thing for Gen Z to become a creator. So there's so many alternative options that are possible. And I think it's important to be real of like, how much of those are there for students to really take advantage of? And like, is that the best option? So we don't try to turn a blind eye to some of those things, but I think it's also realistic to say, like, if you plan for college is in general a great option. But there are, of course, other options, and those options are good for some people. I think it has been interesting to see a little bit of like anti-college sentiment on the rise recently. And to be honest, I think that's fair. There, you know, there was a time where we were giving student loans out to anyone who wanted them at high interest rates. And that's now, you know, potentially creating some economic problems for us. Universities were just focused on, you know, trying to enroll students. They weren't focusing on, you know, education. So it's a challenging space. But we try to consider all of the above and the advising that we do, and I think we've presented a solid solution to the problem.
I want to dive deeper into what you just said, but I do kind of want to take this moment to highlight your team here. So talk to me a little bit about the people that work with you and how you came to think about like hiring and building a team and what that looks like.
It's definitely one of the funnest parts of the entrepreneurial journey. Right now, we have 6 members on the team, 3 full-time, 3 part-time. I have 2 other co-founders. They're both technical co-founders, Dan and Vera. So they're based out of Asheville, North Carolina. I met them when I used to live in Asheville. We all worked in the same co-working space. So, we started off as friends, and you know, now we're all working together, which has been a great foundation to build a company. And yeah, really, really enjoy working with them. Our technical side, we have them on the team, now 3 people that are more brand conscious. They're much younger, so they kind of bring, you know, a lot of new ideas, fresh ideas, especially about college from the younger generations. They make up our product design team. Okay. That's where the team is at. And, you know, we have some advisors and early angel investors on the team as well that are experts in the ed tech area, helping us at this stage. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And another, I guess, like quick thing before we go back to kind of this anti-college sentiment, because I think that is a real thing. When you say angel investors, did you ever seek venture capital funding? Your thoughts on angel investing in terms of how that helped you grow your business, all those things.
So we're actively fundraising right now. So just a shameless plug, I'll throw that out there. But it is extremely helpful. One of our current advisors, who is an expert in the ed tech area and has been through the ed tech entrepreneurial journey, has proved invaluable to us as a company. I think the key there is when you're starting a company, you're going to get advice from everyone. And it's really, really hard to discern what advice to listen to. So having someone in your corner who knows your specific market sector is going to provide 100x better advice than, you know, even someone who is very sharp and intelligent, but if they're in a different sector, it just doesn't always map as well. And so I think angel investors, if they're strategic angels and they have an idea of your sector, they have an idea of your space, or they were former operators and entrepreneurs, angel investors can be extremely helpful just because they've been there. And, myself as a first-time entrepreneur, that's been key.
Yeah.
So, I definitely encourage angel, working with angels, especially if they have some strategic expertise.
Okay. Good to know. I'm not a tech-based business, but I think it's always fun to explore where the money comes from, right? Because that's always people's biggest question about entrepreneurship or going full-time in entrepreneurship. It's like, this is great. I love what I do, but I also need to have my bills paid and secure the future of my company if I'm going to do this. So what does that look like? And I think a lot of that has been building up to what we're about to dive into now, which is tackling the anti-college sentiment, because from my perspective, it's definitely been building for the past 10 years or so, right? When we think about college fees just going up 5 to 6% every year, but seems like no cap in sight, right?
Yeah.
So by the time that, I get ready to have kids and they go off to college, what astronomical fee is it gonna be then, right? And you have people that, maybe a couple generations ahead of me that were like, when I was back in my day, it was $7,000 a year, and I thought that was ridiculous. And so you think about how much it's grown year over year over year, and it just feels like there's no regulations in sight for that. And so how do you continue to justify this increasingly costly investment and weigh that against the risk or benefit of having a job that will may or may not pay that off, or a career that may or may not pay that off, right, in a timely manner, or that allows you to have the economic mobility that you hope you would have by investing your time, money, and energy and effort into, 4 years, 6 years, 2 years, a trade, whatever. And so from your perspective or from your experience just working with a lot of college students and seeing them interact with the app and seeing them interact with the college space, how do you see this being a part of the larger conversation of how we reform the way that we think about college education?
Yeah, I think the key there is that the model that you described, where college prices becoming outrageous, is kind of the is this principle that, in a way, a high school student or a college student then becomes basically a consumer of education. They're basically like a customer, and they're having to pay these insane amounts. And that's really an inverted way that the model should work, where instead, actually, the education institution should be working for the student. And that's challenging because in that scenario, the student has to be the one that's essentially managing the college. So the student has to kind of change the mindset to think that I have to use this education as a means to an end, rather than a college using me as a means to an end, where I just give it a bunch of money and I'm just going there to party for 4 years. That's the narrative that has to be shifted, where the individual has to use college as a tool, not the college, using the individual as a tool to make a bunch of money. That's a very dark and awful system. And we do have situations of that. But I think the reality is that that can be changed extremely easy if the consumer, a high school student in this case, is educated about how to use college as a tool. If they've thought through, oh, I need to go to a small liberal arts school because that's where I'll be best. Or I need to go to a school with a great engineering program because that's my passion. Or, whatever it might be for that particular user, you have to become a very educated customer to navigate college admission successfully. You have to be a smart financial planner. You have to know how to take out loans. So I think the anti-sentiment is both valid, but I think it's also kind of run away a little bit. It's almost, like anything, it's kind of snowballed almost dogmatically at this point to be anti-college, where it's like, no, for the majority of people, college can be extremely helpful, and it can be actually life-changing if you plan for it appropriately. But it does take a lot of work to, apply for a bunch of scholarships. And, one interesting statistic is that there's millions of dollars in scholarship money that goes unapplied for every year. So I think to change that narrative. Like, there's opportunity out there in education. You know, the system might be broken, but the system can definitely help a lot of people still. The anti-college sentiment is interesting, and in some ways is healthy, but hopefully we can get back to a point where higher education as an institution is really, you know, back to being extremely well respected. It becomes a natural choice. I would love to see higher education, receive more funding from the federal government in the future to make college more accessible, at least to have public institutions, public higher ed institutions completely free. And we're starting to see some of that.
Dreaming big, free college. What is that?
Maybe one day.
I'm keeping fingers crossed, not just for me. I'm done with school, but for everyone else who wants to see that as a viable option, because it is, and it is really helpful and really important. One last question, for you as it relates to college. One major thing that I wish any college did, whether that's a trade school, vocational school, a four-year, two-year college, whatever it is really encourage and provide space for students to have critical thinking sessions and critical thinking skills development, right? Because when I think about, the work that you're doing, there isn't a college program in this world that's teaching you how to start a SaaS company. It's just not. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about, your experience and if and how college kind of provided you with this space to develop the critical thinking skills that you now use as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I definitely got those at Guilford. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, I got those in my liberal arts classes. So I got those from classes based in logic, philosophy classes, my English classes as well. Mm-hmm. Critical thinking is very hard to teach. I think it's best done through discussion-based classes. Mm-hmm. It's hard to do it through a lecture class. So I think you can get it more at smaller institutions. But I'll also just say no matter how much critical thinking you have, there's no way to prepare yourself for starting a SaaS company. Yeah. Just get that out there. You have to do it to be able to get an education in it. Yeah. You still learn every day about it, but I'm sure you can get fundamentals in that thing. I'm sure you could get some training on starting a podcasting studio, but there's nothing like actually doing it, right? Yeah, how has your experience been in that regard? Do you think the entrepreneurial journey is something that's teachable, or?
That's a great question, and it's something I think about often because UAB actually started an entrepreneurship degree after I left, and there's a big part of me that wants to say yes and. So yes, I think there are hard skills that can be taught, and I think there are soft skills that can only be learned through experience, mm-hmm. right? So having difficult conversations, deciding what is viable on your financial roadmap next, developing skills of discernment and making decisions. I often get decision fatigue, but I can weather those storms better now because I have experience doing it for so long, right? So I think it's a mix. I think there are some things that I wish I had learned before I started a business, how to set up an LLC or things like that. Those are teachable. But how to make your business successful.
It's hard. I definitely take the viewpoint of a successful business is usually comes from a place of passion. Mm-hmm. You have to have an extremely strong why for for your business and purpose. Mm-hmm. I think that's a huge competitive advantage to have. That's what's going to get you up at 6 in the morning and stay till 9 at night.
Me today.
Oh no.
It's okay. Yeah, I know why I'm here. So
that's right. We got your purpose.
It's no problem at all. And I definitely agree with that. And I used to think that was so corny. Like people would be like, "No, your why? What's your why?" Yeah. And I'd be like, "Well, right now my why is to get you out of my face." But you know, I don't know if that's a valid long term.
So, right. Yeah. There's more people trying to give you advice on your business. Yeah. You know. That's, yeah. It's tough to navigate.
Yeah. Well, before I let you get out of here, I have some rapid fire questions for you. Okay. Uh-oh. He's only on his first drink of coffee, so I don't know how this is going to go, you guys.
Yeah. Say a prayer for me.
God. What is your biggest accomplishment as an entrepreneur?
I think building our team is my biggest accomplishment.
Well, good answer. Team. Ask him for a raise. I'm joking. Don't hold me on that. What's the biggest lesson you've learned as an entrepreneur?
Be patient. Yeah, it takes. I can elaborate on that. It takes so much time, way more time than you think. There's so much to learn. It doesn't happen overnight. But yeah, there are no overnight successes. You have to put in the work. You know, you're not a lottery ticket. You have to create your own future. You have to create your business. You can have the best idea in the world, but it's still going to take years of hard work and conviction to do it.
Lots of gems just dropped. I like it.
Thank you.
Who is a founder that you look up to and why?
I might catch some flack for this one because he's a little controversial, but actually Peter Thiel is a founder I learned a lot from, and you know, I can just get it out there. He has his own views that I don't necessarily believe with, but entrepreneurial, I think he's a founder I look up to a lot just because he has a very intellectual approach and just really believes in trying to think independently and trying to, you know, look at a problem and solve the problem for its core root instead of just building a business for the vanity of like being an entrepreneur. He's really focused on identifying a problem from, you know, a independent viewpoint and then trying to solve that problem. Whereas a lot of entrepreneurs just build to build or, you know, build for the glory. But his rigor in approaching a problem is something that in approaching it with a clear view, I think is something that I appreciate deeply.
Yeah. I'm all for controversy if you can back it up. If you can back it up, I'll take it.
Fair, yeah.
What habits have you had to remove from your life since starting your business?
Oh, wow, that's a great question. I'm a sober entrepreneur. So like I said that like a noun. I don't know why, but I had to remove drinking and anything. And it's not like I ever had, I guess, a real... I wasn't an alcoholic by any means. It's like a few drinks on the weekends socially, like, you know, like most people. And I don't think everyone has to, but when you're in the depths of it and making complex decisions on difficult problems, it's just helped me a lot personally of like the discipline around waking up early and going to bed early. So that's something I've had to change. That I think has been really helpful.
Yeah. I am not a sober entrepreneur, but I did have to stop keeping alcohol in the house and just let it be like a social thing.
Yeah.
Which I drink, you would be surprised how much I drink less now. Or at least I was surprised. Yeah. I don't know if you would be surprised, but.
Well, it's just like it negatively impacts your sleep so much and even just one drink. So, I think that's great.
Yeah. Last but not least, what is your favorite tool or business resource that you find yourself constantly recommending to others?
Well, after their acquisition, it's pretty much a public figure at this point, but Figma is
nice.
Figma is the, you know, software champ these days. It's been an invaluable tool for our team.
Nice. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. And I had a great time. Hope you did too.
Yeah, I had a great time too. Thanks so much for the time and the thoughtful questions. And looking forward to spending more time together. Thank you.
That's all for today's episode. And if you can't wait for the next episode, you can subscribe to our paid membership on Substack to get exclusive content like outtakes, bloopers, after-show thoughts, and more. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating on your app of choice or like this video on YouTube. We'll catch you in the next episode.